You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
For a couple of decades, I've heard scientists worry that the warming world will speed up microorganisms that break down carbon. That could release more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. But is it true? How can we test that? Scientists in different countries have been trying to simulate a warmer world to see what happens to plants and to the soil. Now a team of dozens of scientists have released a summary of those studies. It looks like added carbon from the soil alone adds a whole new need for us to cut human emissions quickly, and as Donald Trump would say, bigly. We've reached the lead author for this letter, published in the journal Nature with 49 other scientists. It was published on December 1st, 2016. Dr. Thomas Crowther has been a postdoctoral fellow funded by the Yale Climate and Energy Institute. Now he's at the Netherlands Institute of Ecology. He's an expert in soil organisms and extends his study to the processes of climate change. Thomas, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks very much for having me on.
To get us started, how much carbon is stored in the soil relative to the amount of carbon dioxide and methane in the atmosphere?
So at the moment, the most recent estimate of global soil carbon stocks is about 880 petagrams, and that's just talking about the upper soil horizon, the very top 10 centimeters of soil, and those are the most sensitive to things like warming and changes in microbial activity. That's really the carbon that we're most interested in.
And a petagram is about a billion metric tons of carbon, is that right?
That's right, a billion metric tons or a trillion kilograms.
All right, now how long have scientists suspected that a warming planet might stimulate a carbon release from the soils?
So for a couple of decades now, we've theoretically supposed that it might be possible that increasing activity of organisms that live in the soil might stimulate the loss of carbon into the atmosphere. But at the same time, we've also had these considerations that maybe increases in plant growth might offset those changes. And so, you know, there would be as much carbon being lost as there is being taken up by the soil under warming. And so that's really why all these studies around the world have been established and been running for a long period of time to try and get an idea on the balance of those two processes.
Well, your team studied and summarized about 50 experiments on the impact of warming the ground. How can anyone test that, and where have those studies been done?
They're conducted all across the Northern Hemisphere. Really, it would be best if we had them in the Southern Hemisphere and the tropics as well, but those are the areas where there's not so much carbon in the soil, so we're not too worried about carbon losses in those regions. But these studies were conducted in individual sites all over the Northern Hemisphere, and they all had warmed plots next to ambient plots. And so you can really compare the amount of soil between those different plots. Other research has been done exploring the actual changes in fluxes to and from the soil. So that's the movement of carbon into and out of the soil. But those are very short-term, immediate-term readings, and they give us a very quick snapshot as to what's happening. And so they show very variable responses. But by looking at the long-term net changes in carbon pools across a huge region, global perspective, we can really get a broad perspective overview on the process and identify how the total global carbon pool is changing.
Well, now the group letter says initial carbon content can be the determining factor during warming. And we know that soils at high latitudes, including Arctic permafrost even, may be deep and contain vast amounts of carbon stored from previous ages. And that seems to say the Arctic will become a significant carbon source. And yet the letter in Nature, if I'm reading it right, says an archive of previous Earth system models predicted increased soil carbon at high latitudes. Thomas, which is it, more carbon loss in high latitudes or less?
Well, based on our study, at least in response to warming alone, we would expect to see losses from the Arctic. Earth system models, though, take into account a range of different processes, and one of the major processes that they take into account is increased plant growth in response to elevated CO2. And this leads to sort of a greening of the Arctic. And so all of those Earth system models that have been used for the climate projections, they've incorporated that increased plant growth, which has meant that they expect there to be increased photosynthesis in the Arctic and then increased carbon uptake and then storage in the soil. But the problem was, we've also had these concerns about this soil carbon feedback, but because the data on this topic has been highly idiosyncratic, with thousands of studies showing increases and thousands showing decreases in soil carbon, ultimately the Earth system modelers in several of the models removed that feedback from the process. So they removed the soil carbon losses, leaving only the increased plant growth. That's why people expected there to be gains in the Arctic. So our study shows that it's absolutely critical that they put this soil carbon feedback back into those models. And we suggest that the losses of carbon from the Arctic, at least from the high latitude soils, has the potential to at least be on the same order of magnitude, if not offset those increases in plant growth.
Now, you talked about reactions in the top 10 centimeters or 4 inches of soil. But what if we included deeper soils? Could the carbon loss be greater than your conclusions?
Yes, certainly losses of carbon from deeper soil horizons has the potential to enhance the losses that we've seen here. And certainly in, you know, high permafrost regions, when you're getting melting of permafrost, that is going to have an impact deeper in the soil, and those are really going to potentially enhance the size of our feedback. The reason we focused on the top 10 centimeters is because this is the most biologically active area, and certainly that's going to be the largest contributor to the soil carbon losses. But if there's going to be any impact at all from the lower horizons, it's also going to be increasing the size of the process.
So will soil surface temperature change in lockstep with atmospheric temperature? In other words, if we have 2 degrees C increase in global mean temperature rise, does the soil go up 2 degrees C, or can it be more or less?
So soil temperature generally matches atmospheric temperature rises, which obviously follow atmospheric CO2 concentrations. So in short, yes, we expect to see gradual warming as we see gradual increases in CO2.
So what are the agents which you've studied which act to release carbon from the soil? Who are the characters we might meet if we had telescopic eyes?
The soil is home to tens of thousands of different species of, obviously there's plants, but there's also bacteria and fungi, the microbes that are hugely abundant in every single gram of soil. And there's also lots of animals like mites and things called calendula or springtails, and, you know, worms and beetles and all sorts of stuff. The soil is absolutely teeming with a huge abundance of organisms. And really it's the microbes that we focus on because they are the greatest biomass. The biggest proportion of the biomass of the living organisms in the soil is the microbes. And so when they get warmer, their activity increases in the same way that, you know, human activity increases when we get warmer, leading to more respiration, leading to more carbon emissions from those microbes. But it certainly happens with plants and animals too. So just the more active all of these organisms are getting, the more they spew carbon out into the atmosphere.
Well, look, I'm a gardener, and I claim gardeners and farmers are the most interested part of the public who care about life in the soil. But our culture, Thomas, trains us to avoid things now like decomposition and smells and rotting, and I wonder if that adds to the general blindness we have for the importance of soil organisms. What do you think?
I think that's a very good point. I think soil organisms are absolutely critical to the functioning of our planet. You know, the breakdown of plant-derived carbon products is responsible for regulating atmospheric CO2 concentrations and regulating our climate. They're critical to the processing of nutrients and to the release of nutrients and to the growth of plants and productivity in agricultural systems. These organisms that are completely ignored by most of us are really the drivers of biogeochemical processes as well as food production and all sorts of other processes. So, yeah, I completely agree with you that it's these organisms that are sort of the unseen majority, and they really play a major role in our planet.
Well, now for a foolish question. I've almost burned my hand putting it into a compost pile where organisms are digesting plants rapidly. Could the added heat from microorganisms working faster add any significant heat to the planet beyond the carbon and methane they emit, or is that just silliness?
It's not silliness. I know what you mean. When you stick your hand in some decomposing material, you can certainly feel the heat. But if there is any additional heat being entered into the atmosphere, it's absolutely nothing in relation to the amount of warming that we get from the CO2 that's being emitted.
Okay. Now, do we know how much soil carbon may be released as carbon dioxide compared to methane? And would methane released from soils be significant?
Certainly, the carbon is likely to come out in the form of methane and carbon dioxide, but it will be in the vast majority of places dominated by carbon dioxide, which is the largest greenhouse gas, but certainly not the most potent. Methane is many times more potent than carbon dioxide, But it's really in those high latitude areas where we're seeing the biggest losses that you actually get a larger proportion of methane buildup in the soil, in the frozen soil. So it's not necessarily a good news story, but it's difficult to say globally what the total proportions are at this moment. But that's obviously something that we're looking into at the moment.
This is Radio EcoShock. We're talking with scientist Thomas Crowther. Let's talk a little bit about the limitations, as there are doubts about all scientific papers. First of all, I was confused to read that by 2050, global soil carbon stocks in the upper soil horizons will fall by 30 plus or minus 30 petagrams. Now, if I read that correctly, it seems to include a margin of error of 100%. Doesn't that imply this projection of increased carbon release could be wrong?
It certainly suggests that the value of 30 might be wrong. It is our most likely estimate, but still, there's a large uncertainty. But what I'd really stress is that uncertainty is not a concern here, because we're talking about processes that are going to drastically accelerate the rate of climate change. And so what this study categorically shows is that there will be this feedback. It will exist. And I sort of equate it to, if you're planning to cross a road and there's a bus coming at 50 miles an hour, there's no doctor on earth who can tell you exactly how many bones you're going to break. There's a huge uncertainty in his understanding of how damaged you're going to be. But we do know that there's going to be a significant damage to you, and therefore that should be enough information to encourage you to avoid moving buses in the future. And that's really what we're doing here. We show that undoubtedly there's going to be considerable losses. The magnitude of those losses varies hugely, but we can suggest that for sure that the losses are going to occur.
Indeed. Please step away from the bus. Well, this fall, I talked with Professor James Curran. He's formerly the head of the Scottish Environmental Protection Agency, and his paper suggests biomass is capturing less carbon dioxide, the plants, less carbon dioxide as the climate becomes hotter. Is your projection for greenhouse gas emissions from soil affected by that if plants sequester less carbon from the soil?
Certainly, as any processes that dampen the carbon sequestration in plants are going to contribute to this kind of process in soil. Ultimately, plants are the main players that are responsible for taking carbon from the atmosphere and sticking it in the soil. So anything that damages that potential to take that carbon up ultimately limits the amount of carbon that's sequestered in the soil, yes.
Thomas, what about the impacts of precipitation changes like growing desertification in the subtropics or more rain in the Arctic? How does that affect this study?
So the impact of precipitation changes could drastically alter the effects that we observe here. So you're going to see extreme precipitation changes. That can really regulate the magnitude of losses. In our study, we're only really able to address the warming, and the value of that is we have a better perspective on how general that warming is going to be, and we know that that is the dominant process, by far the major process regulating carbon emissions from soil. But certainly changes in precipitation, which could be idiosyncratic, might alter the magnitude of this effect to some extent, and that's why it's processes like that that cause us to have so much uncertainty in that final prediction.
Now, to be clear, in this paper, when you discuss 1 degree C of warming over 35 years to 2050, are you assuming 1 degree above pre-industrial temperature of the planet or 1 degree hotter than we are now?
That would be 1 degree hotter than we are now. But that's not what we're predicting. That's the most sort of recent ensemble member of the Earth system model suggests that surface soil temperature is going to go up by 2 degrees by that time. So it's closer to an order of magnitude of 55 petagrams by 2050 will be lost from the carbon.
Can you please explain why the effects of a given amount of warming are never fully realized?
So ultimately, the process is always acting in response to warming. So the warming takes place, and then it's within the next couple of years that ultimately the total extent of carbon emissions takes place. So it's never an immediate process. And so it's almost like the changes in carbon emissions are always following the changes in warming.
Okay. So since more carbon from soils will increase warming, we call this a positive feedback loop. Are there control factors which can slow or halt this extra carbon release from the soil?
Certainly. There's a lot of evidence suggesting that changes to agricultural practices, things like holistic management of grazing animals or, the use of biochar or organic products can lead to massive scale carbon sequestration. And this has the potential to dampen the feedback that we're talking about here. And, you know, if done on a global scale, I think it has a really good, a strong chance to put a major dent in the magnitude of these carbon losses.
As you know, many scientists worry that a hotter world will lead to mass extinctions of plants, animals, and other life forms that can't adapt to a rapidly changed environment. What about the world of microbiology? Thomas Crowther, is there a point at which heating causes damage or even mass death of critical microbial life?
That's definitely an important point, actually, because the reason we see the major losses occurring in the Arctic is because there is a limit on the extent to which microbes will continue to grow. I'll explain myself. Essentially, a microbe will continually get more and more active up to about 30 or 40 degrees. But beyond that 30 or 40 degree threshold, ultimately their enzymes start to denature and they start to struggle, and then they no longer emit as much carbon. And the reason we see such bigger changes in the Arctic than we do in the tropics is because the tropics are already close to that 30 degree mark. So when you warm an already warm microbe, you get no increases in carbon losses. But when you warm a microbe that's existing in the Arctic at 0 degrees, then there's immediately increases, and that will only continue to increase until the Arctic is 30 degrees. So at least within our timescale that we're thinking of on a climate change timescale, that we will hopefully never reach a time when warming doesn't stimulate microbial activity in the high latitude regions of the world.
Okay. Now, next, your paper says, quote, "We stress that such statistical approaches cannot be used to project soil carbon losses far into the future." Why not?
Ultimately, we are predicting changes in a single pixel, each pixel of the Earth, based on a simple linear relationship. And this relationship is really good at predicting what's happening now. But when you project it over hundreds of years, ultimately the magnitude of carbon in each of those pixels changes so much that the linear relationship no longer applies to them. And it's for that reason that we really encourage the incorporation of these data into Earth system models. And those are the kind of models that take into account weather patterns and changes in plant growth and changes in precipitation and changes in all sorts of other processes, whether they're caused by humans or not. And when you incorporate all of the information from all of those processes, it's then that you're going to get a really good handle on what's happening to every single pixel on Earth.
Now, media reports say this added soil carbon could be equal to adding another United States in terms of emissions. I had a question about that. Does that mean 1 year of U.S. emissions could come from the soil by 2050, or that every year soils could release the same amount as the United States does now?
So I think the article that highlighted that was suggesting that it would be every year the soils will emit as much as the United States is doing now. I think it was calculated more roughly, though, based on we estimated that the carbon emissions from the soil are going to be approximately equivalent to 17% of current anthropogenic emissions, well, expected anthropogenic emissions over that time. So every year, humans will emit a certain amount, and then the soil will be responsible for an extra 17%. Whereas at the moment, the U.S. is also 17% of the total anthropogenic emissions. So it's really just sort of on that same order of magnitude. Every year, the soils will emit almost as much, well, about equivalent amounts of carbon that we expect to be emitted from the U.S.
It's like adding a new giant industrialized country just because of this new knowledge. Now, looking at the ramifications of that, the Paris Climate Agreement set what I think are very soft goals for countries to limit greenhouse gas emissions. Now we have this new scientific information. It seems to me, wouldn't the national goals have to either increase or be moved up in time in order to counterbalance the soil carbon loss your letter warns about?
Well, that may possibly be the case. I could only argue that the increasing emissions from the soil clarify, they really sort of drive home the necessity for us to at least be meeting the targets that we met in COP. And I completely agree. Now that we know the magnitude of these carbon losses from the soil, the more we learn about the carbon dynamics in the future, the more it suggests that we really need to cut down and, if possible, get lower than the sort of targets that they originally set at COP. But it's really that understanding of Earth system dynamics that allows us to set the right targets, and hopefully we can hit them in the future.
How serious do you think this news is, Thomas?
I think it's extremely serious, actually, because ultimately, our current understanding of how the climate is changing is based on models, and several of these models didn't even really incorporate a thorough understanding of this feedback. In fact, they removed it from several of the models. So when this information is placed back into the models, it's certainly going to increase the rate at which we're expecting climate change to be. And so that just means that it's going to increase the rate at which all the catastrophic events associated with climate change are going to come into play. So it really stresses the urgency with which we need to start fighting against climate change.
And along those lines, your paper calls for a concerted international research effort to track the reaction of soils to warming. At the same time, as you know, President-elect Donald Trump's team announced a multi-billion-dollar cut to climate research at NASA. You were in the Netherlands. Do you think that other countries can find enough political support to fund the soil carbon project without the United States?
Ultimately, I don't think that too many countries around the world are considering Mr. Trump's, at least his stance on climate change that he suggested during the election. I don't think they're taking that too seriously. Generally, politicians around the world are in agreement with almost all of the scientists that climate change is a serious and significant problem. So I think funding around the world for climate change research is certainly, well, hopefully going to remain high. And it's really for this reason that I actually think that Mr. Trump is in one of the strongest positions ever to have to be a president with the potential to have such a positive impact on the world. If he takes into account the overwhelming message from almost all of the scientists in the world, then certainly he can have one of the most positive impacts of any president in recent history, I think.
And what about the lack of data from the Southern Hemisphere? We have listeners there. Who can provide that information? Where are the priority countries for this research to get done?
Well, everywhere in the tropics, really. Ultimately, we need data from everywhere around the tropics to really see if they do fit our models. We predict that carbon losses from the tropics are not going to be inconsequential, really, because there's relatively small amount of carbon in the soil over there. Because, as I mentioned, the microbes are already warm, they're already respiring a lot, they're already decomposing all that plant material. But maybe there's going to be some sort of other changes that occur in the tropics that we didn't foresee. Maybe there's going to be increased uptake by the soils or something like that. So certainly we want to set up experiments over there. And I'm in the process of setting one up in Costa Rica. We also have people working in across Africa to try and set up these similar warming experiments. But ultimately, as you mentioned in your last comment, what we really need is sort of scientific funding on climate change to really be able to get a handle on the size of this effect and to really minimize that the size of that uncertainty so we can predict exactly what the climate's going to do in the future.
Well, your team's letter to the journal Nature generated some pretty good publicity. Have you received positive interest from other scientists or agencies or even governments?
The response has been amazing, absolutely. Governments in Europe as well as scientists all over the world have been absolutely very much in support of it. And I think it's hopefully going to spur on a lot of additional interest and funding in this really important research area.
Thomas Crowther, I know it's exciting to discover results in science, but this is really bad news heaped on already bad news. Does it bother you?
I have to admit, sometimes it does. I really, of course I want to understand the world, and if that understanding of the world can bring some sad news, then certainly it's not always enjoyable. And it seems very strange when you sort of celebrate a big discovery, but that discovery is about something so catastrophic for humanity. It's a really serious impact. But what I would stress is that I do certainly see the positive side of this. I think if we're going to fight against something as considerable as climate change, the first thing we need to do is understand how considerable it's going to be. And once we get a handle on future climate conditions, and once we understand what the climate's going to do, it's only then that we can really set meaningful targets to fight against it. So I like to believe that this is certainly contributing to our fight against climate change.
We've been talking about a worrying new addition to escalating greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. The letter from 50 scientists just published in the journal Nature is titled Quantifying Global Soil Carbon Losses in Response to Warming. From the Netherlands Institute of Ecology, we've been speaking with the lead author, Dr. Thomas Crowther. Find links to Thomas and the science we've talked about in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Thomas, thank you so much for spending time with us on Radio EcoShock.
Been great to chat. Thanks very much.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.